Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Royals baseball coming up a little bit later on this afternoon. Vern's On Deck show is at noon, so just a two-hour show today, unless there is a change in the weather forecast that alters that. But that is the plan. That is the plan. It feels, yeah, we're getting, I can declare it today. I think we are finally done with the 90s until next year.
You're calling summer over.
Yep.
You're saying over. You're ready for hoodies?
Yep. It's over.
Fire pits.
I think we're done with the 90s. I mean, we're still getting the low 80s next week and today and stuff, but I think the 90s are done until like May. Or Jews will ask him the same question if there's a personnel shift he would like to see. Nobody's saying that you should be changing everything 2 weeks from the season, but is there a player that, you know, you'd like to see play a little bit more? I told you, I think it's Breshard Smith. Cody says Jaden Hicks. Drew going with Ashton Gelati a little bit as well. We'll get into the Royals loss last night, or win last night, I'm sorry, but the play of one pitcher that they lost for much of the season and how that can impact the offseason coming up in just a bit. Interesting numbers that were floating around yesterday from Bill Barnwell about just some of the top teams in the NFL and how old teams are, how young teams are. And this is just based off of the snaps and age. You just got done saying you think defensively they're not playing a lot of young guys, but it's kind of intriguing to see it broken down this way. So, for example, the Chiefs' average age on offense is 27.2 years old. That is the middle of the pack of the league. 16th. They are they're not the oldest. They're not the youngest.
Not
they're in the middle.
And that's with an older
30-year-old quarterback.
Well, Patrick Mahomes is in the top 10 oldest quarterbacks in the NFL because so many teams have bad quarterbacks. Yeah. A lot of them are in their 20s.
If you're wondering, the youngest offense in the league right now is the Rams. Or the oldest, I'm sorry, offense in the league is the Rams.
Stafford's really not helping that.
Mm-hmm. The Packers are the youngest, along with the Jets and the Seahawks. So the Seahawks are at 25.6 years of average age on the offense. Jets 3, Packers 25.8. On the defensive side of the ball, the Chiefs, younger, but not maybe as young as we would like it, based on more snaps for Noel Williams. So the Chiefs, 26.5 years old is the average age. That's 22nd.
They're younger, but they're older compared to the rest of the league. Is
correct.
Teams typically start younger defensive players.
Overall, they skew older, still as a whole entire team. 22 is where they rank, which, again, that's going to be, or skew younger, I'm sorry. The five oldest teams, Steelers, Commanders, Browns, Broncos, Vikings. Five youngest teams in football, I already mentioned Packers, Jets, Seahawks, Cowboys, Eagles. So more on the NFC side in terms of the younger teams in the NFL, for whatever reason, just the way it's worked out. I guess, is that intriguing to you at all to see, you know, we talk about roster turnover and, you know, where you draft and things like that. You have to turn over the roster, but they still, like, I think they actually right now have done a nice job. They've balanced it pretty well. They have not gone full youth movement. You can't when you have a team that's trying, you know, to win now. But also at the same time, you know, they're not the Steelers, who are basically the oldest team in football, or one of the oldest teams in football.
I think if you look at it, it's encouraging to me, because I think that part of the offensive age is being skewed by the fact that Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce exist. Like, that is skewing where they are, because I think if you actually thought about it, the Chiefs' offense is incredibly young. They've got two offensive linemen who are just barely into their second contracts in the NFL, so they're still in their, not even into their 30s, in their mid-20s, late-20s. Then you've got an entire group of wide receivers all on rookie deals. Royals, Worthy, Rice. Like, nobody's, you know, Juju's skewing that thing up. And he's the fourth or fifth option on the team.
True.
Hell, even Tyquan Thornton's still in his 20s. And so, like, I actually think the offense skews younger than you think. And it's just the Kareem Hunt, Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes of the world. I think I feel better about that unit. Defensively, I'm kind of torn. Because defensively, I understand something that's going to happen very quick, which is, what are you going to do when Chris Jones isn't around? And the fact that you're already on a second contract, like we mentioned for George Karlaftis, and you'll be on a second contract for Trent McDuffie here soon enough.
Top pick next year, there's a real chance it's the defensive lineman.
And maybe an interior defensive lineman or somebody who can get to the quarterback in a hurry. That unit feels older to me. And part of it is because, not that they're physically older than the offensive side of the ball. They've been with the team for a long time. And as you just pointed out, defenses skew younger in the NFL. A lot of teams play 23, 24, 25-year-old defensive players. And some of their players just feel like they've longer in the tooth than that, I guess.
Here's where, like, some of the contenders in the AFC, at least over the last couple of years, if you're just wondering. So, for example, a team like the Buffalo Bills. So, where the Chiefs on offense, I said, were 27.2. The Bills are also 27.2 average age. Defensively, the Bills are 26.9 average age. The Chiefs, I told you, are 26.9, literally, or 26.5, and they're also 26.5. The Chiefs and Bills have identical average age on offense and defense.
But here are their oldest players in the team. The offense, it's a liar. They are one of, and this is why I'll give them a lot of time to grow this year, especially when they get other players back. In my opinion, they're one of the youngest offenses in the NFL. Here are their five oldest players. One, doesn't matter, it's Patrick Mahomes. He's their third oldest player.
Oh, the Chiefs, not the Bills, sorry.
Unimportant, okay. Because he's the quarterback. Robert Tonyan, Travis Kelce, Kareem Hunt, Gardner Minshew, Juju Smith-Schuster. Every other player on the team is 28 years or younger, and I would argue far more important players for where they're headed in their future.
Sure.
Like, way more important. Because, like, Travis Kelce's only for this year. He's not the long-term part of where those things are. Every other player on the roster, including all their wide receivers, essentially, are, like, 25 and under. And so, like, even Trey Smith's only 26. And so, like, I think the offense is still younger than even it looks like on paper. 16th is a bit of a misnomer because the two old tight ends and Kareem Hunt and Gardner Minshew are on the roster, you know? And Gardner's still not even 30. And so, I still think that there's a lot of growth there. All the young defensive players don't play. That's the problem. Bassa, Gelati, Noel Williams, Jaden Hicks, and Omar Norman Lott are their five youngest players. Any of those guys play more than 40% of the snaps?
No,
this year?
And again, this number is not based
on... Maybe Gelati, but that's it.
It's important.
He's right at that mark.
Yeah, it's important to mention, the way they're doing the age stuff on this is snap based on snaps through week two. Not necessarily like looking at the roster and going average. This is based on who's actually playing. So I know...
That's why the defense is skewing older.
Right, but it's based off that, but also you listed off some of the vets. Like, Robert... Yes, you're saying that, hey, they're actually really young. It doesn't count. Now, the numbers I'm giving you, though, are based on who's played, though. So, yeah, Robert Tonyan.
Juju's had to play more, I would argue.
Yeah,
but
now,
sure.
Robert Tonyan, I don't know how many snaps has he played in the first 2 weeks. It can't be much. It can't be that. More in week two,
I'll
maybe,
be honest, when I was looking up the snap counts earlier, I did not look up
You weren't
Robert's.
Focusing on Robert Tonyan. Point is, just there's some guys that this number's already factoring in them not playing. That's all.
But sure.
Isn't that something, though, that, like, going back even like to the last conversation, is that something that Spags has to adjust to?
No.
Like you
I mean, he's had the number one defense in the league, so this is one of those like real tough situations. Would I like him to play younger players more, Drew? Yep. Do I get to be like, hey man, what's the deal? Why don't you play any of these guys more? It's like I run into a murky territory.
No, but to your point, when Chris Jones is gone, they are going to he's going to have no choice. But has to play a young player. He's going to have to play a rookie. And again, somebody mentioned it yesterday. It's tough.
Chris Jones is under contract for another 2+ years, and by then they'll either sign another free agent, big time player, or they'll be drafted. You know what I mean?
Like, I know, but is that where they're going to figure it? Is that where they're going to
do
stuff?
Telling
as long
you
as Spags is there, where you know what? I don't want a rookie starting for me. You can draft one, but I want you to go sign somebody in free agency.
Robert Tonyan, by the way, has played 10% of the snaps.
Okay, yeah, Drew. I would say again, unless they move on from Chris Jones earlier in 2 years, if we think they might have to draft a defensive lineman in the first round this year, who's to say that defensive lineman isn't legit in 2 years? He's not a young player. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, like Gelati could
like
be a better
Chris
player
Jones,
2 years from now.
If Chris Jones was gone after this season, then yeah, I think you're right. They would go the free agent big time player route more than they would go and want to start a young player. But I guess what I'm saying is like they're going to have 2 years to prepare for his departure.
A lot of this is they're going to have to get way younger and play younger players, Drew, not because Spags is going to be forced into it, but because the thing that we don't want to admit, which is their cap problems are going
That's
to start being far more real.
Yeah.
Right now,
Chris
they're
Jones
able to survive their cap. But
Chris Jones' cap in next year is a mess.
It's astronomical. It's so high. And Patrick Mahomes' number goes up. And some of these other players who are playing a lower number two right now's numbers go up. And so, like, as much as I'd like to just sit here and pretend that they're never going to have cap issues with Patrick Mahomes at some point, reality is reality. Sure. And they are going to have to, like, suffer the consequences of their cap, and that typically comes with young. That's why I feel great about the offense. Right now, there's not a single player
they're
playing on
offense.
You should
feel good about the offense, yes.
There's not a single player offensively that I like going for, that I think is a four-year player for them, that isn't already paid and figured out underneath the cap, or a rookie, a wide receiver in their rookie deal. And I'll be honest, based on recent news events, I think there's a decent chance they're getting a discount on Rashee Rice if he ends up being really good when he comes back. Because
oh, the Tyreek Hill discount contract, I'll just the first tell you, time, you mean.
There was an article out at Yahoo Sports today that, you know, like Rashee Rice's, like the lawyers against Rashee Rice in one of the civil cases for the person he had hurt in an accident, had said they still hadn't paid any of the $500,000 that for the first payment of the $1.2 million or whatever he owes, because funds, right? A little short on cash. Not surprising. Rashee Rice hasn't made much money, and I imagine he had to spend a fortune paying just the lawyers to get to this part. He might be a discount guy in a year. And so, like, the offense is where I feel good. Defensively, at some point, they're either going to have to draft some superstars, which is very tough, finding a play of Chris Jones caliber, or they're going to have to be young everywhere and athletic everywhere and hope that they've got one or two stars you mentioned they can, like, pay in free agency.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though, is that if they draft a defensive lineman and Chris Jones, like, if they draft a defensive lineman this year, which the class, unfortunately, is not that great at defensive tackle, so as it looks right now, but if they draft a defensive tackle and he's that dude, and Chris Jones looks a little bit washed next year, but Spags is like, nah, I got to play Chris Jones because he's my... Then that's what I think the problem is, where if he's like, well, I got to play Bolton because he's my guy, or I got to play Shamari Connor because he's my guy. I don't care if he misses tackles and can't cover.
But by then,
times.
He might play them because they're a second-year, a third-year player. By then, he likes playing them.
It doesn't make any sense, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, but also
he's that good of a coach.
I'll push back, though. Like, I know you were giving an example, but like you said, if Chris Jones is washed in a year, kind of like Nick Bolton, I think sometimes these conversations we're having about Bolton.
No, I did not say Nick Bolton was washed. I said he likes players like Nick Bolton.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I thought you were calling Nick Bolton
no,
washed.
That's what it sounded like.
Because same with Chris Jones, like acting like Chris Jones or Nick Bolton, it's one thing if you can say, hey, you don't like how they're playing. I disagree with that. Either player looks like they're just done or washed or whatever. That would have been, to me, kind of crazy to say. That's all.
We're okay. Everything's
Nick Bolton's still, what, 27?
Gold, I did see big news for your alma mater today. Yes. All the reports is that they're heading to London.
Yeah,
I can't believe, first off, I just assumed that there was a college football game that's been played in London to this point, but apparently
never.
Not. There hasn't been a game for the power conferences that have been played in London. And according to reports, Kansas will take on Arizona State as a Kansas home game in London at Wembley in early September next year. You're normally anti giving up home games, but in college they get like 15 of them.
Reason why this makes sense next year is KU Stadium is still going to be under construction, and so they will have reduced capacity. If you were ever to do it, this year would, or last year would have been the year to do it, or next year, right? Like last year when they were playing games at Arrowhead and Sporting, that would have been a year to do this, or next year when the east side of the stadium is still going to be under construction. So I guess this would be the time to do it. Brett McMurphy says it's going to happen next year on September 19th, 2026. It is a home game, as you said, so there's a ton of money involved here. The same reason why K-State went to Ireland. They got a ton of money to give up a home game. The worry, of course, is the trip hangover. People will use that if you're a K-State fan for some of that. I would say Iowa State's looked just fine since the trip. This is a conference game as well, and if it's in week four, my guess is they would have a bye week set up right after. So we'll see. Yeah, it's going to happen. In general, yeah, I'm not a fan of giving up a home game ever to go play internationally. But if you're going to have less seats available for fans to begin with, it makes it out to be a pretty smart financial decision for Kansas if that's the case next year.
I think it's overall, this follows the one thing I would say, the single best quality of Brett Yormark to this point is he understands that they can't be the Big Ten of the SEC of football, and they're never going to get the exposure. So they're going to have to buy their exposure. They're going to have to build a brand, and they're going to have to go branding and marketing and exposure and big ideas. And so if two of your teams from the conference are willing to go over there for the Union Jack series is what they call it, hopefully all right. Big 12 teams, well, then do it. Pop them over and brand the hell out of it. Put it on early in the morning. Gold, same thing. I bet if Kansas is playing 8 in the morning, you'll be up. You'll put the game on. You'll watch. Yormark is good at marketing. He's very, very good at that. I actually think that that's why they survived instead of the Pac-12. Nobody knew what the Pac-12 brand was anymore. The Big 12 at least had an identity.
Yeah, he's willing to take risks. He's innovative. You know, I, again, in general, I don't think there's many fan bases that want their program going overseas and giving up games. I think they made this decision with these teams. It may, you know, you have Arizona State, who at this point is played well, but they don't have a ton of ties to the Big 12 rivalries yet. They're new. And then Kansas, you found a team that's still upgrading their stadium, and next year they're going to have fewer seats available. So it kind of is a perfect fit. In the future, it'll be interesting what teams are willing to give up that game that aren't making changes to their stadium, that are more established, etc. You know, nobody's going to want to give up a rivalry game overseas, so it would have to be games
like
this.
You don't want KU K-State.
Yeah, like I know Farmageddon's a rivalry, but like I'm talking about, like, you're not playing KU K-State in Ireland or London. Right?
Farmageddon is a decent rivalry.
Farmageddon's a big rivalry.
Yeah, but it's not an in-state rivalry.
From the 785, did you say the stadium will be in construction next year? That's 3 years. The Empire State Building was built in 1 year.
Yeah, phase two of the project hasn't started.
They started talking about raising funds for the stadium like 15 years ago, so you should just be happy it's being built.
Yeah, like, phase two of the project, once this football season is over, they immediately start demolishing the east side of the stadium and working on the phase two.
Yeah.
The Gateway District.
I'm excited. I think it's good for the Big 12. I think it's good for Kansas. Both things are important. You know, we haven't seen a lot of international college football games, too. The only difference is like the student athlete stuff is so far gone out the window. I borderline wonder why we make them go to class at all. What are we doing? What is this student part of the Professor Tapp?
Says Professor Tapp of the University of Missouri, Kansas City, or Kansas City University.
The next time you have an athlete, you should just ask them why.
I have an athlete in my class right now.
No, so what you should do is when they show up, you should ask legitimately. Just be like, why are you in here?
Well, in fairness,
why are you coming to my class? Just straight up ask him that. Why are you here?
My class is unavailable online.
You're a pro athlete,
and you know, slightly different than the Division One collegiate football level versus, you know, whoever I've got on like the golf team.
College football coverage on 96.5 The Fan is brought to you by Bud Light. Bud Light and Tanners are teaming up to make every college game day legendary. Every Saturday, rep your college team, catch every play, and enjoy $15 buckets only at Kansas area Tanners locations. Bud Light and Tanners, from the stands to the bar, your game day headquarters. Up next, we'll talk about the Royals briefly after Cole Reagans made his return to the rotation. What could that set up for the offseason? Coming up in 25 minutes, Danan Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, part of the Chiefs radio network. He, of course, will be in the Meadowlands Sunday night on the call with Mitch Holthus and Josh Klingler right here on 96.5 The Fan. I really want to ask him about, I don't know if he ever played with, you know, like the harness on the shoulder that Worthy might have to play with. If he plays, he will have to play with. Or if he had a teammate, just what does he think the limitation, if any, could be from Worthy? We'll try to get some inside knowledge on that from Danan in just a little bit. But let's pivot a little bit to baseball for a second. The Royals, of course, had a series continuing against the Mariners last night. They also have a game this afternoon right here on 96.5 The Fan. It was a 7-5 win. That part doesn't really matter. It's the fact that
back to 500.
Cole Reagans returned to the rotation yesterday after missing a good chunk of the season, unfortunately. And we know there were going to be limitations in his debut back. 3 2/3, gave up one hit, two earned runs, two walks, four strikeouts.
First inning looked awesome.
Yeah, first inning, you're like, okay. And as we discussed with Vern yesterday, he'll get one more outing probably, right, before the season's over. And
yeah, I don't think based on the timing he'd get two.
I think he gets one more. And can he look good enough to where at least it keeps the door open that he's one of the pitchers you could potentially think about using to acquire an outfielder? Now, he alone is not going to get you what you want, but can he and somebody else package together versus it just being, in my opinion, a Noah Cameron type? Chris Bubich, I don't think, is tradable with the injury. So Cole Reagans would be another option if he can show that he's healthy, that he can get through some starts. He only has one more, though, to prove that.
Cole Reagans is under contract for 3 more years after this one for the Royals and makes nothing. I mean, just absolutely nothing. He makes $4.5 million next year. He makes $7.5 million the year after that. And then they'll have to arbitration eligible argue over a fee, probably make him about a $10 million pitcher.
Okay.
That's nothing. That's just no money in Major League Baseball, especially as the cap and numbers come up. And you also know that probably around that 2027 range, is anyone going to play? Are you going to lose an entire? You really do have to think about this stuff. Are you going to lose one of the 3 years? Because I know the players are going to argue that whatever year they hold out on, that those don't count against them as far as contract years or anything else in between, and they don't want those actively working against them. Here's the truth. I just want to know who you're willing to trade. Are you willing to trade Cole Reagans? Are you willing to trade Noah Cameron? Are you willing to trade Chris Bubich? Are you willing to trade Burgert, yes, or Kolek, yes, or, you know, like, because as it sits, Waka, and I don't think, like, Waka because of
he's
his age and all that other
give
stuff.
You enough back in return.
Sure. They are not short on available options to do it. An old me think, I'd have been like, man, I don't want, like, Cole Reagans, a dirt cheap ace when healthy? That's not the kind of person I want trading, almost never. Their recent development of pitching is making me way faster and looser on my willingness to trade almost any of them. Is that like,
no, I
that
fair.
Might be insane, but like they're just calling up anybody and they're successful at this point.
I think it's fair, and it's frankly, it's similar to what the Rays have done in their history. You know, we all know that the ties with Matt Quatrero to that organization, and they're always used as kind of the example that people tried to for pitching development. And you have to be willing to, you know, turn over the pitching staff a little bit more often than maybe some other organizations. You know, you max them out. Frankly, maybe the way you're teaching them how to pitch as well, is that tougher on the arm? I don't know, right? But you also, you know, you know your pitcher better than any other organization.
Yeah.
And so is the clock ticking on anybody as well in terms of health? All that knowledge that you have to use that to your advantage as well. What you're describing would be, to me, what the Rays have done a lot throughout their history. Some really, really good pitchers they were willing to trade when they were still pitching pretty well, but they felt confident in their development to,
yep,
turn it over and continue to add assets.
Like when they traded Chris Archer, it did not impact them at all. They just traded away a guy who was like a ace-level starter, who was cheap and under control, and they just moved on from Chris Archer, and they're just like, and Tyler Glasnow, they're like, eh. Like, for the most part, and look, it's been a little bit rockier lately, but their pitching development allowed them to move on from guys. And the truth is, very similar to how I feel now, they have more guys in their system who are closer to helping them at the big league level at pitching than they do hitting. Maybe it's Ben Kuderna, right? Didn't he just get promoted to AAA like a month ago? Maybe he's on the doorstep. And look, it's probably far too many years for me to discuss David Shields, but as their organizational pitcher of the year is only 18 years old, he might only be 2 years away from helping you at the end of this Cole Reagans thing. I genuinely think there's not a pitcher who should be considered safe, and you should be looking at return for the player you want more than the name of the pitcher. And that includes guys like Noah Cameron, who have impossibly cheap control for the next 5 years.
913-586-7965. Someone says, why do you have to trade for an outfielder? Just pay for one. I would agree with that model this past offseason. The tricky thing is, if you take a little peek on the projected
Kyle
free,
Schwarber, nothing.
You take a look at the projected free agent outfielders, there's not many options. I'm not saying there isn't a option. There's not many options. And so how else are you going to acquire an outfielder? Well, that would be via trade, and the assets that you have are more plentiful in the pitching department, or if you go down to the minors, obviously, and you're willing to trade a prospect like Blake Mitchell, which to me they should be willing to if they believe Carter Jensen's the future. I don't know if they do, but it sounds like it. And that's more of a near-term thing than it is.
I love how much Carter Jensen gets on base.
If your argument is like they should have just spent money for an outfielder, well, yeah, that goes back to this past offseason. I think it's very evident at this point in time they made a mistake in how they evaluated their offseason of the outfield position. I mean, they completely
they could get by
their
with
starting
it.
Left fielder and right fielder and opening day. One's not even in baseball anymore. The other one's stuck in AAA.
He just got the cycle in AAA.
He did. He was like the International League player.
He is a genuinely confusing player.
Yeah.
But he might, by the way, you want to talk about a guy who ends up in a trade this year that we don't need to talk about?
He just gets thrown in probably, though.
Yes. I'm not saying he's getting you something in return. I'm just stating a fact that I'd be surprised if MJ Melendez is still a member of the Royals organization by the time 2026 starts. That's all.
Yeah, we'll see. This won't be the last time we talk about this convo. This will be one of the biggest stories, not just with him, Cole Reagans, in general. How do they go and acquire that outfielder? Who are you willing to part ways with? And yeah, you're going to have to part ways if you go the trade route with someone that you think is pretty good. Hence, they have value. That's the tough decisions that JJ Piccolo gets paid to make and will have to make this offseason. All right, let's talk some more NFL. Colin Cowherd was talking about coaches, and we've discussed the Andy Reid future and his track record and how people will view him when his career's over, right? His
and how legacy. That's been going for Belichick.
His
lately.
Legacy, in contrast to how it looks like it's ending for Belichick. Andy Reid might be ending on a heater. I understand they're 0-2 right now, but in general, he's winning titles at the end, whereas Belichick wasn't. Another name that's part of this convo that we've never really talked about, at least according to Colin Cowherd, is how about Jim Harbaugh? Listen to his argument about Harbaugh being the greatest coach of all time.
Football's different. There's the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and then there's the College Football Hall of Fame. But I was thinking this morning that if you combine it like basketball, And it was just, there was a football Hall of Fame. You could count college and pro. I would make an argument today. The greatest coach in the history of football is not Bill Belichick or Bill Walsh or Vince Lombardi. It's Jim Harbaugh, the greatest coach ever. Think about this. He's never failed. He's 5-for-5 at San Diego, Stanford, San Francisco 49ers, Michigan, and the Chargers. He's never failed. Saban and Urban, unbelievable college legends, struggled in the NFL. He's also not tied to a single player. What's Belichick without Brady? Not great. The only person that kind of compares to him is Jimmy Johnson.
So I actually think he makes some good points. I think there's some points that are very, very strong.
He didn't fail anywhere.
He hasn't failed anywhere, and it's true. He does not have the quarterback attached to him that you say, oh, this is why he had successes at him or the quarterback. Those are strong points. The one part he leaves out, though, that I think has to always be factored in, the same way it is, at least with part of your opinion, not everything, but part of your opinion with Belichick, and that is, hey, Harbaugh has been caught and punished for cheating while coaching.
Yes.
In a serious way. Now, the title, as we discussed at the time, it's not like the title gets stripped away from his record or anything. But we also know there's cheating allegations around his career. That, to me, kind of hurts your case to be the greatest of all time.
And also just like, come on, you're asking me to weigh it in a very weird way. So championships have to matter when we have the greatest of all time debates. Mm-hmm. They have to matter some. And again, the Bill Russell versus some of the others. Era also matters and when you're able to win it, right? If you're playing in the 30s and you can just win title after title after title after title and there's no safeguards, right? I care less about the Yankees titles in the 30s when, like,
sure,
you know, the league wasn't integrated and a million other things, right? Tough on Saban. Saban wasn't a total... He wasn't... Let's not lump him in with Urban Meyer in the NFL. Saban was a 500 coach in the NFL and won 7 national championships at 2 different programs.
Sure.
And he's not tied to a single player either. So if I'm combining both,
but we're having the greatest of all time combo. Yeah. And so he needed to have more NFL success, right?
Maybe, but like, what is Harbaugh's NFL success? He doesn't have an NFL title. He's coached in 1 Super Bowl.
And that's far more than what Saban did in the NFL.
I know, but like, that's not enough to discount 5 national championships.
Yeah,
you know,
someone's
like,
saying, what has he done it with the Chargers? Remember, he coached the 49ers as well.
So somebody brings up...
No, you do. I just say the texter.
Somebody brings up the ultimate point. I think the one person who actually could challenge him and might actually be better in this conversation is Pete Carroll.
He's done the exact same thing.
Yeah, and except for he's won the Super Bowl.
He's won
actually
the Super Bowl and has won
an
actual...
Yeah. One or two.
Yeah, I think... And
one.
Yeah. He's... I think if you wanted to use the example, I think Pete Carroll actually is the example that that Colin Cowherd should be using if he wants to take this route of success.
You're probably going to hate this. And I'll just tell you, like, Gold, there's plenty of arguments like we mentioned before on the other side as well. You know what the single biggest problem I have with this is that I think coaching college is easier. I think it's way, way, way easier. I don't think it's about being a coach. You can have the advantages you have coaching in college at play. And I know he won at San Diego State, but the advantages you have coaching at USC, coaching at Michigan, you are instantly better than 98% of all colleges. Your roster is better. Your team's better. You don't have to like negotiate a cap or coach better. It's just, it's easier to coach.
You know how many college coaches have gone to the NFL because they think college is too hard?
I think coaching in college.
To give you an example, to give you a direct example, Jeff Hafley. To give you an example, Jeff Hafley, who's the DC at Green Bay, quit mid-season because he thought coaching in the NFL was easier because it was only about coaching. If you're a coach in college, you have to deal with recruiting and meetings and traveling the country, trying to get money in NIL, and then you also have to coach.
That to me isn't coaching. Getting NIL money,
that's part of the job, Cody. Yeah, if your argument is that, hey, if you're at Michigan versus another school, you have more resources, therefore it makes
way
it
more.
Okay, if that's your argument, I get it, but I'm with Drew on the idea, though, like, the argument that it's just on game day, that's all you do, that's all that it counts for, is not true
at all.
That's
why people love the NFL, is like, because it's only coaching. I don't have to worry about any of the other crap.
I think there's pros and cons to both, obviously, and why one coach won the other, but I do agree with Drew on the point of recruiting is a huge part of the job. And now, I would actually argue coaching now is tougher than it was 10 years ago in college.
Which doesn't have Harbaugh in this argument.
This is why programs are hiring GMs. Because now the coach, they're trying to make it to where the coach doesn't have to manage the cap, essentially, of NIL. But there are coaches that are doing that. Recruiting, you know what a headache? I mean, right now, you're dealing with a quarterback that, you know, he's pissed because he lost the starting job. Now he wants to transfer, and you got to massage this kid's ego or whatever. It's just, to me, coaching would be, in college would be a disaster.
I'm not saying it's not like a bigger headache. Yes. I just don't think it's as hard. Yeah. The other part is, like, championships are also going to hurt Harbaugh on this. Like, he's been successful everywhere he's been, but what does he have? One NFL?
He's got one
college football title?
Yes, correct.
That ain't enough. Not to be the greatest. People are also going back. Get closer.
Yeah. Again, we're talking football. Someone says, what about John Wooden? We're not talking about he's talking college football. And he's talking football coaches, not basketball coaches. I also think someone probably, if you go Colin Coward's argument, then Barry Switzer's in the mix of this as well, because he obviously was involved.
And you mentioned Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
Johnson's a good example.
So there's a bunch there. I just think the cheating thing is a big part of it. Someone brought up Pete Carroll cheating. Here's where that one, I think he gets more of a pass, frankly, is he was involved with the Reggie Bush thing, which he was never personally connected to, which has since been, everybody agrees, was just completely ludicrous. So I don't think people view Pete Carroll as a cheater the way they maybe would view Harbaugh.
The same thing that goes on now.
Yeah. I also view, I'll just be, and this is like personal, obviously everyone can view it a little bit different. Do you guys view, I review recruiting cheating different than like I'm taping your practice. Like,
yeah,
paying players, I don't care. They were probably going to come to Michigan.
I agree with that. It's still cheating, but I know what you're saying.
You know,
100%.
It's a weighted cheating to me.
Wait, like, which is why Belichick, like, I think, which is
stupid, but I really know what
you're trying to say. Yeah.
I really do.
If there was a worse cheater, different. You would label Belichick as the worst cheater. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because he filmed people's. That's way worse cheating.
That's a schematic advantage and all that. Now,
yeah.
Recruiting is a huge part of your program, and cheating to get a better player is, having said talent on your team is also a huge freaking deal to be able to get. So, interesting for conversation. I don't think I agree with Coward on Harbaugh being the greatest coach of all time. I'll tell you that because I think it opens by that criteria. It opens it up for so many other individuals. We'll talk with Dane and Hughes here in about 12 minutes or so. But the Chiefs are going to play Russell Wilson on Sunday night. What's your confidence check just as we sit Thursday at 10:50 in the morning on taking on Russell Wilson, knowing what the Chiefs have looked like, knowing what the Giants have looked like?
He looked pretty good in that game against the Cowboys.
And oddly enough, that makes me more confident. I don't believe Russell Wilson can put together two great performances at this stage of his career.
I was curious because of how good he looked. Does it worry you that the defense will backslide a little bit, or they're going to have to get in a shootout?
I mean, Neighbors is a problem.
Definitively something I don't want them getting in. I do not want the Chiefs getting in a shootout with anyone until the rest of their offensive weapons are back. I don't think that that's a good way for them to win or a successful way for them to win. I thought maybe you'd disagree. I also do not think Russell Wilson is capable of putting together back-to-back games like that. I think Russell Wilson is the kind of quarterback that occasionally he can still show you that he had it once.
Yeah,
you're like, oh yeah, remember when that's what Russ looked like week in and week out and they were a Super Bowl contending team every time? That's nice. More often than not, he looks like what he looked like in week one, which was terrible. He threw for 168 yards and completed 45% of his passes. He's just as likely to be that than the Cowboys version.
I'm probably like a 7 out of a 10 confidence the Chiefs win. Like, it's probably a 7. Like, before the season, I would have said it's going to be a 10. It's probably a 7 for me heading into Sunday's game.
I mean, 7, 8? Yeah, I mean, I can't go lower than 5, can I? It's the Giants. Malik Neighbors is a huge
still
problem.
Not a coin flip game or anything.
But like, what else do they bring to the table besides they have a good defensive line?
Defensive front is impressive.
Yeah, the defensive front is good.
Very impressive.
But also, for as impressive as it is, Cowboys had no trouble carving them up.
The Cowboys also have CeeDee Lamb and all their weapons offensively. You know, that's the issue,
I know,
right?
Deontay Williams.
they have better.
Deontay Williams. Let's not make out like he's a superstar.
Their rushing attack is better set up than what the Chiefs got right now.
That's a really low bar. I'd say that about 27 teams in the NFL.
You know, the Chiefs could have signed Javonte Williams for the same amount of money they're paying Elijah Mitchell, roughly.
Mm-hmm. Yikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a miss.
Yikes.
Look, Elijah Mitchell was a miss. I don't think there's any way. He's been inactive back-to-back game days.
Correct.
That was a whiff.
Correct.
Now, it was only a $1 million whiff. My biggest, you know what was a bigger whiff in my opinion? Giving that money to Kareem Hunt instead of Javonte Williams.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I had from the beginning was, why are you giving it to an aging back who didn't show burst last year?
Mm-hmm.
Now you think, and at least he was off the street and didn't have any miles on the tires when the season started last year. What is Kareem Hunt going to look like week 7 this year? Like, anybody want to ask that question? We don't think he looks like he has burst now. What happens when he's playing 40% of the snaps and it's week 7?
Javonte,
because he's going to look like he's running in quicksand by the time we hit there. I hope Rashard Smith knows the system by then.
If my math is right, Javonte Williams has 57 more rushing yards than Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt combined this season.
That's not great. I get, but he's just like, yeah, he's whatever. I've watched a lot of Javonte Williams because he played with Denver for a long time. The other problem you have with Williams is the same as other teams. We'll ask about, like, J.K. Dobbins. He looks good now, Drew. Will his body be available? Will he be available to play in a couple of weeks? He might not be.
I think you guys are right, though, in the fact that the way that the Cowboys carved up the Giants' defense, it should give you some encouragement. Not that the Chiefs can do the same thing, but that they should be more effective and trust that the defense, if they give the same sort of performance they did against Philly, then they'll be totally fine and they'll win the game. It's not going to be an issue.
Somebody says running back is only as good as their offensive line. I actually do not think. I think that there is both things at play.
But the Texans calling Ginty a bust. He's 2 weeks into his NFL career. He's on a bust.
I do think that part of the problem Ashton Ginty is having is related to his offensive
line. Right, but he's not a bust yet.
No.
I mean, he got two weeks into his career and he hasn't been. Like, it's over. I mean, come on. He didn't blow out his knee and you're like, oh man, he's never going to be the same. He's 2 weeks into his career. He's been okay. He has not lived up to the top.
Pretty bad, but it's also like, yeah, it's so what? It's two games. Like, and I know that someone's going to say that, well, can't you say that about Pacheco? I'm like, I think we're seeing out of the Chiefs run game what we expected. And I'm not saying offensive line bears no weight. I'm not saying that's a zero factor in this. But I'll be honest, people who know football well, Mitchell Schwartz, people who like no offensive line play, no running back play, no football, grind tape, however you want to look at it. I've watched 10 clips from the last two games where Isaiah Pacheco does not go the right way. He chooses the wrong hole. He runs into his own offensive lineman when there is a hole. He doesn't go outside when Joshua Williams, you know, like multiple. There's multiple opportunities that he has had in the run game that he's not taken advantage of.
I agree.
So I don't know that it's, I'm not saying the offensive line bears no weight in this discussion, but it's, look, Russell Wilson, I don't know. He'll probably just be in the middle of those two. He'll have like 200 yards and a touchdown. And the Malik Nabers part should scare us, but at least they held down A.J. Brown and held down Devonta Smith pretty good in the last game. And
they'll just don't try to pass the ball, whereas we know the Giants will. Russell Wilson's just going to throw it up there and hope his guy gets it.
That's my only concern, is the way they blitzed, that was the Eagles' offensive game plan. What if I just throw the ball up in the air and hope my guy gets it? I don't know that there's a single defender in the NFL I trust in a jump ball situation against Malik Nabers. Not, and certainly not the Chiefs. That's Trent McDuffie's size. That's the one time it actively hurts him.
Sure.
Is it like Devonta Smith can just, he's bigger. He can just be bigger than him in that moment. The coverage stuff doesn't matter. Trent McDuffie was standing right next to Devonta Smith and still couldn't defend that pass. So that the over under, what do we say? 3.5, they say moon ball. What's our verdict?
Oh, did they say on the broadcast? Yeah, over. Collinsworth will mention moon ball at least four times on the broadcast Sunday night.
Just wait for it. Just wait for it, Cody.
Let's talk about wide receivers like Malik Nabers, like Xavier Worthy, with a former wide receiver, Danen Hughes.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Joins us next. 11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Just a couple Royals notes to pass along as we hand things off to Vern at noon today. Royals taking on the Mariners out at Kauffman Stadium. Ryan Burger was just placed on the 15-day IL with a right elbow strain. Avila was recalled from AAA Omaha. Kyle Isbell placed on the 10-day IL with a left hamstring strain. Obviously, his season, therefore, is basically over. John Rave recalled from AAA Omaha. So a bevy of moves for the Kansas City Royals. But let's talk some Chiefs football as they get set to go to New York to take on the Giants. I guess for Danen Hughes, I don't know if he's going back home necessarily, although the New Jersey area and everything, right? Danen Hughes joins us here on Cody and Gold, brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue, and brought to you by Flight. Flight by Yingling, the next generation of light beer. Do you have is this a friends weekend as well for you?
Actually, it's just a home going coming, man. I'm going back home. Where we're staying at in Jersey City is where my wife grew up, and it's right next door to where I grew up. And so I got a high school football game tomorrow night. My high school's playing, and Iowa is playing at Rutgers tomorrow night.
Oh, wow, that's perfect.
So, yeah, we got a trifecta this weekend, hopefully we get 3 wins.
How did you negotiate with Roger Goodell to get this all timed out perfectly like this?
Hey, I cannot reveal my sources or anything that I have on Roger Goodell that would sway him to go my way. I cannot do that on public airwaves. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we know as far as the team, we know going into this one, everybody thinks Worthy's trending towards being able to play with that dislocated shoulder. He's going to need to wear a harness. Did you ever have a shoulder injury like this, or a teammate? What does this mean in terms of maybe his ability to play, catch radius and all that?
Yes, I actually did. I still have, I assume, subluxating shoulders, which means that they can pop in and out at any time. For the old heads there, that may reference a Lethal Weapon, Mel Gibson, when he used to hit his shoulder on the wall
sure.
in the movie. That's subluxating. It can pop in and out. I did not wear a harness, but I did wear extra padding on it, and I would just have to grind through it and grin and bear it. And it is a tough injury to have, because as a wide receiver, most people would say, well, wide receivers, you can avoid hits, get down on the ground, run out of bounds. But what about the balls that are thrown over your head or contested balls? And now you have to raise that arm up, and you have some limitations in regards to your range of motion. So there are some challenges with it. It's not impossible to play with. You just got to tough through it. And the fact that I think it was a smart move, although we could have used him last week against the Eagles, it was a smart move to sit him. I'm sure he was in a position to at least fight through it. And it's probably one of those injuries last week where if it was week 16 or a playoff, he would play. But it's a smart move to get him a little bit more healed, because the one thing you don't want is something like that to be lingering for weeks. And now what could have been him bouncing back and now being at 75%, had he played last week, maybe he would have just been 55% for several weeks until the bye, barring any other injury. So I think it was a smart move, but I have played through that, and I have played with a lot of teammates, actually, that have had to wear harnesses and other contraptions on their arms because of a shoulder injury.
Danan, and speaking to a few other former players, I think the weirdest part about it, though, and the truth is that some guys just play better and it doesn't bother them, and some guys it bothers more. Same with the torn labrum and all the other stuff. Some guys are just better at playing through injuries, and we don't know that about Xavier Worthy till he's out there, right?
Correct. I mean, everybody is different. Everybody's body is different. Everybody's response, and, you know, you think about the mental approach. It's one thing to heal up, or it's one thing to be cleared to play. It's another thing to not allow it to mentally get into your head. And now you're starting to think about diving for a ball. Should I dive for a ball? How do I catch this ball as opposed to just reacting? The game of football, especially at the NFL level, is so fast that you don't have time to think about stuff like that. You just have to go out and do. And there are some guys, I mean, I played with Dale Carter. He had a broken forearm, and he just had padding over it and played through it. He had a shoulder injury very similar to Xavier Worthy, and he played through it. And he played with reckless abandon. He didn't care about his body. He didn't even think about any of that stuff. He would throw his body into scrums and into big running backs, and like it didn't matter. So I feel like it's just about the makeup of the guy and how much adrenaline is flowing through his body, because that can get you through some of those tough times during the game. And then just staying active. Like you'd hate to see Xavier Worthy, and it's not like a leg injury where you have to sit on the bike. He may be on the bike with the rowing with his arms just to keep his arms going. But with a leg injury, you know, you don't want a defense to be on the field for a 12 to 14 play drive and you're sitting on the sideline. That's not necessarily the case with a shoulder injury, but you got to do things on the sideline outside of your routine to stay warm, stay loose, and to be able to go in the game with confidence.
When you look at what they're going to do on the running game, where do you think things need to improve? As in, do they need to use Breshard Smith more? Is Isaiah Pacheco where do you think the issues are, I guess, first off? And also, can they continue letting Mahomes run at this rate? We were pointing out he's only 20 yards behind Saquon Barkley. I feel like that can't be good in the long run.
Yeah, I don't think that's good in the long run, but I will say this, and I said this earlier this week on Bob's Fesco show. He ran the ball 7 times last game, led the team in rushing. We've all seen it, heard it. We all recognize it. Of those 7 runs, and I was pointing it out during the broadcast on this station, that when he was opting to run, and there's a difference because of all the noise and hoopla made about the offensive line during the offseason, and obviously the issues that we had in the Super Bowl and some of last year, I think the offensive line, they get blamed for things that are not necessarily their fault. Not saying that Patrick is doing a bad job, but there are times where he takes the ball and runs with it because he sees a window that he wants to take advantage of. Doesn't mean that it's a breakdown in the offensive line. Doesn't mean that the offensive line didn't do their job. It just means that he's taking a window to run. So of those 7 runs, I counted like 5 of them that he could have stayed in the pocket and possibly dealt the ball down the field. Doesn't mean that it was a bad play. It just means that he's opting to run, and that's just an instinct that he's going with right now. That I think as the season moves forward, I'm hoping once we get Rashee Rice back, once we get Xavier Worthy back, once you get this offense moving at the clip we all know it can, he's going to reverse that and then just get back to the form of what he's done in the past to run in big plays, preferably in the latter part of the season.
We're talking to Danan Hughes here on 96.5 The Fan. What have you seen from the Giants? You know, they're 0-2, but last week in a shootout against the Cowboys offensively, of course, Russell Wilson played pretty damn well. Malik Nabers, we know what he brings to the table. What's the biggest concern here for the Chiefs?
I think the biggest concern is that they are in desperation mode, similar to us. Neither team wants to go 0-3. They're playing at home. Russell Wilson has given us some fits at times, even with that craziness that he was dealing with Sean Payton in Denver. He still was able to put their teams in position to win games against us. So he's a veteran. You can tell he can still throw the deep ball, although he had that last interception. The rest of the game, he was airing it out. So I feel like if they want to make a stance and they want to, you know, kind of save their season to some respect, this is a great way to do it on Sunday Night Football against the Chiefs, who have been dominant in the AFC for so long. So there's a lot of incentive on their side. I expect them, unlike what we saw with the Eagles, I expect them to go for some home run throws just like they did last week, because guess what? It worked. It worked for them. So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So they're going to come out and probably see very similar game plan to what they employed last week against the Cowboys. And we have to be ready for that. They know we play man-to-man. We know we play man-to-man. They know we're not just going to allow him to sit back in the pocket without any pressure. And they're going to be ready for that. The one way you defeat that is by throwing it up to your tall playmaking receivers and either hope for a catch or a penalty that'll get you a chunk of yardage. That's how you get defenses to pull their foot off the gas pedal.
Danan, it might admittedly be because of the injury. So if that's part of your answer, I understand. But there's part of me, and I'm curious if you've seen the same, I've been very disappointed in the lack of differences in the offense. It feels like it's the exact same offense I had to watch last year. And I think for the most part, it wasn't successful for big chunks of the year. And it didn't feel like they came in here running a lot of different schemes or changes. And for a team that, you know, like Andy Reid, I know makes changes, I'm surprised to see it look so similar.
Well, I mean, what offense doesn't look the same as it did in previous years? It's just a matter of execution. So it's not like there's an overhaul of a playbook where you start to change, you change everything up. I mean, again, and I saw this on Get Up this morning, and I thought it was said over the course of this week. Prior to three games ago, we were going to go down as one of the best, if not the best teams in history. So you can't just throw everything out because we've had three losses, one of them being embarrassing and the other one being games that we would have won in the past by one score game. So, yeah, are they playing at a mid-season or late-season clip on offense? No. But does that mean that the concepts are wrong and that they can't make plays? And then remember, last year it was Rashee Rice and Hollywood Brown out of the offense. Isaiah Pacheco out for a large portion of the season. This year it's Rashee Rice and for 1 7/8 of a game, Xavier Worthy. Once we get those guys back, then I think that's when you can have the conversation. Give me 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks after all of those guys are healthy on the field to decide if this offense looks the same and there should be some changes.
Dane and Hughes will be listening on Sunday night right here on 96.5 The Fan as the Chiefs take on the Giants. Appreciate it. Enjoy the trip back home.
All right, fellas. Thank you.
There you go. Dane and Hughes joins us thanks to Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue and brought to you by Flight. Flight by Yingling, the next generation of light beer. Talk about everything coming together for Dane this weekend. That's kind of cool. He gets to
Iowa
go.
Iowa and Rutgers and his high school.
Yeah, Iowa's playing Rutgers the same weekend. Obviously, the Jersey, of course, that's where the stadium is at as well. Perfect. It all sets up.
The birthplace of college football.
Yeah.
So this Friday will be the first high school football game I've attended in a very long
time. You're going?
My daughter did like a Pommy camp. So they like perform at halftime.
This is Oak Park game on
Friday.
Okay.
When's the last time you went to your alma mater?
Oh.
I have not been to a high school football game in my alma mater since high school. I have not been since.
Same.
I don't know if that makes me a bad person, but I have not been since high school.
No, I mean, if you played on the football team or something, I think it's probably different. You probably have gone back.
Might shock you.
I have not.
Did not.
Yeah, same. in case you need clarification. Yeah, I have not been back. High school football game, I've been to one within the last, it's probably still been 6 years.
When did you go? Just like
In Texas. I wanted to experience high school football in Texas.
That's fair.
Because it's obviously a different animal down there. So I went to a couple in Houston when I was there. But I don't think I've been to one since I've been back in Kansas City. Am I missing one? I don't think so. Maybe it'll change when my nephews get older and stuff. You know, maybe I'll have a different answer. But right now, yeah, I have no reason to go to a high school.
I mean, unless they're playing in it, why would you go? You're not going to just go to the high school football game that unless, they're also attending. That's weird.
But unless there's some player that's like, you know, top recruit or something, and I just want to go watch, right? Like, you know, there's some talent, obviously, in the KC area.
I think Carrington goes to more high school sports than anyone else. Pink, obviously, over the years.
For football. Carrington, I think, does a lot of high school basketball.
Oak Park, I'm going to Binkley's alma mater on Friday.
Oh, he's going to text you now.
He's
going to be texting you all kinds of scoops.
I got to say, I don't know who they're playing. I should probably look that up, huh?
I mean,
let's see. I mean, I'm there to watch my daughter do a halftime thing. They're taking on Smithville.
Are you staying for the whole game?
Oak Park is 2-1 on the season, Cody. They're 2-1. Oh, no, wrong school. Sorry.
No, they're 1-2.
1-2, yeah.
Tough start for Oak Park.
Yeah, 1-2. Mm. I was looking at the wrong year.
I thought they had a pretty good year last year, but they have allowed 116 points in two games this year. So I feel I would suggest not giving up 60 points a game if you'd like things. Oh, I'm sorry. That's in three games. So 40 points a game. But still.
That's tough.
I would suggest that's not the case.
54 against Lee.
I can't tell you the last time that I've been in Indianapolis around high school football season.
Somebody says
you don't go to the homecoming games. I'm like, no.
I could see Drew going. I'm surprised you don't go to more high school football games.
Yeah, that actually does surprise me. It just feels like something you would just randomly go to in the area.
So it's weird. Like as much as I love college football, I think I'd be more on Carrington. If I went to high school events, it'd be high school basketball. I think I would be more likely to.
It would have to be like the person projected. Like it had to be like Cooper Flagg was playing locally for me to go.
Yeah, I mean,
I saw Ochai Agbaji's number hung up, the jersey hung up, when we were there for practice.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
The week before, and even that's like that wasn't the person who's going to go number one overall. It was just the top kid in the area.
Yeah. The last time I went to a high school football game at my alma mater was a year after I graduated. But again, I've bounced around in so many places. I haven't been in Indianapolis in the fall to go to one.
True.
Somebody said Smithville favored by 5.5. Who's doing lines for high school football games?
They're joking.
You're doing high school football lines. Which side of the action do you want on that? You want to bet on high schoolers?
I'm not.
If we get to that point, we know that gambling has gone too far. No. If we lines.
That's
the last straw. Yes. Yeah. That is the last straw.
Nobody's doing that. Someone says gold. The Ravens are much better than when you were there. They used to be bad. Oh, trust me. Football team was not good at all when I was there. They were horrendous.
Didn't you say that they were found? Like, you were there when they got
the school was only like three years old.
Winnetonka was also horrible at football when I was there. Although they did, for whatever reason, maybe based on population, were dropped down a class for a single year I was there and won a district championship.
There you go.
Or like a conference.
That drop down helped a lot.
Yeah, that drop down in class for the year boosted.
My alma mater.
How's Winnetonka these days? Any good? Anybody know?
I have no idea.
You're supposed to keep up with these things, Cody.
You don't know your alma mater's record. Get out of here.
I don't know them this year. I know last year they went 5-4. Lawrence Central. When I was growing up, LC was awful in football. When I went there, we beat our rival 70-0.
There you go.
And we went to state twice and won it once.
How about that?
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the trash of the day.
Trash of the day.
All right, let's go out to Torrance, California, shall we?
Sure.
I mainly did this one because you know how much I enjoy this type of restaurant. But there was a Benihana
Chinese
restaurant.
Chinese buffet?
No, that's you, which I think you've taken our advice.
I don't think he'll ever go back to one ever again.
We've convinced you after your food point. No, this is different. This is hibachi, okay? Benihana is hibachi. Anyway, it was the site of a brawl between employees on Monday night. Basically, there's a whole video. You should watch it. Utensils are thrown everywhere. Plates, dishes. Customers rush from their seats to avoid being part of the fight. Eventually, security managed to escort a, quote, highly agitated man off the premises. That suspect was gone once police arrived at the scene. The melee reportedly started by a dispute between a manager and one of the employees. Now, in your time working in the restaurant industry, did you ever see a manager and employee get in a fight that led to a brawl or any sort of physical confrontation?
No brawl. I've certainly seen loud verbal arguments, but I've never seen a physical fight between a manager.
I like a Benihana, though. I like a hibachi restaurant. You know that.
I feel like I want to take my kids there
you
soon.
Should.
They've never been one.
Cody, you have to.
Seven to nine feels like the range where it's like kind of fun to watch them.
Yeah, they'll enjoy
flip
it.
The food.
All this, they'll enjoy the big fire that they light. They'll enjoy the onion that becomes a volcano. They pour the sauce in, and it looks like it's the...
You think I should take my kids to a little
all
hibachi?
They can catch some shrimp, all of it. You got to take the kids to a little hibachi.
Honestly, most of my life has spent actively figuring out how to not get into a physical altercation. So I very rarely often think about that. I'm fine to get into a verbal argument, but I'm not trying to like get into a fight. That's also like the worst kind of restaurant to fight in. A hibachi? Like,
why is it the worst?
Everything's hot and open and available.
Well, yeah, don't be thrown on the hibachi grill. That's a problem.
Yeah, it's just too close access-wise. Normally, what's the worst that's going to get you? A plate or a glass? You know, I mean, you're not going to see that. I've never seen anyone even like, I've never seen a restaurant employee.
Fried rice
frozen.
There is incredible.
Mostly people, so in my experience in the restaurant industry, just like cry in closets or like to walk in. Mostly
Wait, they'll
the
go,
emotional.
They'll cry?
Oh,
they'll
I've
go
seen
in
lots
to cry?
Of people cry at work in the restaurant game.
Like they'll just go hide somewhere.
Normally in a closet or in the walk-in. Like
that
in
seems
the
like
fridge,
a terrible
freezer.
Environment.
To cry?
Well, just that it's causing that. In the workplace.
It was a pretty common experience. Like that was like a once a week.
Was it because like a customer was rude to them or something?
Sometimes that. Maybe sometimes they got overwhelmed because their section was too busy. It was a lot of sometimes they were mad about things that were happening in the restaurant or like the chef yelled at them, you know?
Did you get yelled at by the chef?
Oh, I've been yelled at by a chef. Yeah.
What did you do?
Well, you know, mess up an order enough in the middle of a busy time, they might get back.
You messed the order up, not the chef.
Honestly, it may be one of the few things I'll take credit for in my time working in restaurants. If I went to a table, I actively took blame if it was my fault. But I also blamed the kitchen if it was theirs.
There you
like,
go.
If it was my fault, I came to the table with integrity.
The chef screwed up, guys.
If they screwed up, I told them they screwed up.
I've got to be honest.
I'll be honest with you. I did not put dressing on the side. That's on me. I'll go get that taken care of. That one's on me. I'll solve that problem. But if they screwed it up, I'm not taking the blame.
Yeah. No, you should take the kids to hibachi. I think they would enjoy it, Cody.
I'll have to keep that in mind.
I haven't been to a hibachi place.
A little teriyaki chicken and steak, some fried rice. Everybody's happy.
Yeah, I think it's probably time. I think we'll plan that out here soon.
Drew, when's the last time you went? Have you been to hibachi?
I've been. I can't tell you the last time I went.
Trip to a hibachi.
Hey, I'm all for that. Hey,
we got to go to Chuck's Arcade first.
We can do that after.
Oh, okay.
From the 913, I love Chinese buffets. There's one in Leavenworth that this person frequents at. How often would you say you get food poisoning if you're going? Like, if you get sick?
Okay, we're talking about two different restaurants.
No, it's the reasoning.
Do not put hibachi in the category of Chinese buffet. These are two.
I agree. I'm just saying if somebody frequents at a Chinese buffet and there's a reputation, then I wonder if you're sick a little bit more often, you know?
Yeah, in general, I don't know. Like, how often have I had food poisoning in my life, period, from anything? I have no idea. A handful of times, maybe? I don't know. It's hard to also know for sure, you know?
For some reason,
in the last year, I've had the stomach bug or whatever it is, food poisoning twice, which before that, I'd only had maybe once or twice in my life. So I'm either doing something wrong or there's just something going on.
Yeah,
that is the trash of the day, guys.
That reminds me
somebody else says they eat at Chinese buffets all the time.
I had to do a food handler's card when I worked in restaurants, and so you had to do this like big. You had to sit in like a 3-hour class, and the guy in that claimed he had been food poisoned like 71 times. I'm like, sir, I think you might just have like IBS.
That's crazy.
I actually don't think that these restaurants are all poisoning you. Yeah. I think you might have Crohn's disease.
Yeah, there might be.
And you should get looked at by a doctor.
Might have some bowel problems.
Yeah, you've just been food poisoned.
That's unbelievable.
Up next, we'll get to the Chiefs for a half hour and what Patrick Mahomes said yesterday on The Drive.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
Chiefs Red Half Hour brought to you by All Weather Decks, Kansas City's most respected deck builder. Check them out at allweatherdecks.net. Happens to be, by the way, Gold. I love sitting out when it's like sprinkling, raining, like where it's not.
You
nice.
Sit on the deck and you get to read a book. Are you going to read a book?
I'm a very Midwest. No, I got a TV out there.
What are you going to watch?
I got a projector screen.
Oh. You're going to the Royals game today, though.
Not today. I just meant in general, I like sitting outside when it's like raining slightly outside.
Yeah.
Cool fall weather. That's all.
No, I enjoy this weather. Absolutely. Now, admittedly, after we have it for two straight weeks of no sun, then I'm not enjoying it.
Then you're
that.
Over it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, okay. But right this second, oh yeah, this is great. I mean, this is one of those, you wake up and it's still dark out between also just we haven't fallen backwards or whatever. In terms of daylight savings time and everything, but also
is that coming up?
Yeah, November 2nd, and then also
you had that memorized.
There was an article I just saw yesterday.
I was like, God, you had that down.
I just saw the article yesterday. Like it was in passing. That's the only reason why I knew. It was so dark out, so you could just stay. You could have just laid in bed for hours today. Could have just stayed in bed. You could have hit that snooze button 100 times today.
If only. If only we didn't have jobs.
We are going to hand things off to Vern, though, in about 25 minutes as the Royals have a day game against the Seattle Mariners today. Of course, yesterday you saw Carter Jensen come up with a hit. Caglione came up with a hit. Royals get the win. And we'll see ultimately if they can at least make the Mariners work for their division crown in the AL.
Yeah, honestly, ILS. Make life hard on them. Show fight towards the end of the season. Give yourself something happy going into next year. And obviously, if Jensen and Caglione want to continue to contribute, I'm all aboard that, certainly, because that's going to move the needle for them next year.
Yesterday, Patrick Mahomes was on with Carrington, And of course, for the weekly interview, talking about, you know, the performance on Sunday, but also yesterday was his birthday. As you know, we did a topic around, you know, his 30s and what Brady's 30s look like in terms of performance and everything. And Mahomes in an interview said at one point in time that, you know, hey, it's been a fun, you know, 9 years essentially, but hopefully it's another 10 or 15 years.
This is a
player. The exact quote from Patrick Mahomes was, "It's been a lot of fun these last 9 years, but let's make it another 10 to 15 more."
Okay, so early on in his career, he had kind of made it sound like, I'm not going to be one of those guys who plays into my 40s. He has stopped saying that publicly, and now instead is in an interview saying 10 to 15 years? Are you telling me we get mid-40s Patrick Mahomes?
I won't go there yet, but it means he's open to it at this point when he's 30. Is he saying that when he's 37 and he's beat up more and his kids are older and all that kind of stuff? I don't know. I don't think he's retiring before 40. Like, anybody was thinking, oh, he's going to be one of these guys that just said, hey, 38. Now, we're all presuming health, too, right? Of course, that can derail any career. Sure. We're all assuming that's not why he would hang it up. Yeah, I feel more confident that he's starting in this league and hopefully through the Chiefs when he's 40 years old than I probably did, you know, a couple years ago. I thought there was a real chance that maybe, like, he could be one of those guys that would hang it up at 38, 39, given the opportunities these guys now have off the field and financial reasons as well, and the money they're making throughout their careers more than it ever has been. Now, I don't know if I'm willing to say, oh, I'm going to hold him to it. 45, I wouldn't go that far, Cody. But, yeah, I think 40's in play.
I think it's more realistic now than it's ever been. Now, part of it is we're still limited by the numbers. How many quarterbacks have played successful football in their 40s? The answer is still one and a half.
You mean by winning a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I was going to say and a half if I'm giving Aaron Rodgers the, like, he still plays competent level football in his 40s.
Yeah, I guess the barometer is if we're still holding it to the Super Bowl standard, or are we just saying he's one of the still the top 15 quarterbacks?
How many others besides even those guys? Like, if I give Aaron Rodgers.
I'm saying, like, Joe Flacco a couple years ago played pretty good football for his age. Now, yeah. Nobody thought he was going to lead him to a Super Bowl, but he won a playoff game, didn't he?
But it was still incredibly limited. And now he was a more.
Or did they lose that playoff game?
They lost it. And he's a more limited player in his regular NFL career. So maybe his standard of play hasn't dropped off, in fairness, versus what it is. And look, Aaron Rodgers was like 39 years old, still playing top 15 quarterback, but it's, and 37 was playing MVP level quarterback.
Manning's last year, and he obviously was hurt and stuff, and
he was
and
terrible
a shell of himself,
that year.
A shell of himself, and he was 39. He didn't make it to 40.
No, he didn't. And so, like, now I would say Peyton Manning was dealing with more injuries leading into it. The biggest part of this right now is, and we probably haven't discussed this enough, and I don't know if I'm supposed to knock on a ton of wood or whatever this works. Patrick Mahomes had a very healthy career.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh,
and God. So, well, come on. I'm not allowed to say, I'm just stating a fact. I'm putting
Clip
a statement.
It, write it down.
I'm putting a statement of fact into the, I'm allowed to say that. That's factually correct.
You are.
And so, like, some of this will come into, like, if he maintains the same level of health he's been fortunate to have so far, I think it'll be easy to convince yourself to play into your 40s. And to play regularly into your 40s. And the fact that at 30 years old, he's already saying 10 to 15 years makes me think that maybe we are about halfway age-wise through Patrick Mahomes' career, but there's still plenty of years left, I guess, into this thing. I hope he plays into his 40s. Yeah. There's no reason to think he still won't be one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL.
Someone said Rich Gannon. Yeah, Rich Gannon, younger than you think. He was that Super Bowl appearance, he was 37 when that happened, and he retired after his 39-year-old season. So, yes, he was older, but we're talking like when you're 40. Plus.
I always thought I was getting Patrick Mahomes at age 37.
Man, Rich Gannon.
I'm trying to decide if Joe Burrow's going to Andrew Luck and he's going to quit at 29.
I'm now going down a rabbit hole of Rich Gannon and bringing up bad memories. But I forgot.
Well, they made the wrong choice between Gannon and Gerbach.
Yes, they did. The Rich Gannon that won an MVP a few years later?
I say what? This is one of the differences, like, if you've lived in a town in your entire life. Drew, do you have any idea what we're talking about between, like, the decision-making between Gannon and Gerbach? Does that doesn't, like, ring into your brain in any way,
I mean,
right?
I remember watching Rich Gannon play, but I don't know who, you said Gerbach? I couldn't tell you who that
so
is.
So much like the Drew
they
Brees,
had both on the roster
Dante Culpepper, they had both, Elvis Gerbach and Rich Gannon, on the roster before Rich Gannon won an MVP and won a Super Bowl with the, or went to a Super Bowl?
Went to
a Super Bowl with the Raiders. He was on the roster at the same time, and they looked at those two guys and they said, Our guy's Elvis Gerbach, presumably only because his name was cooler. Although Gannon, Rich Gannon's not like a terrible name.
That's a good name.
It's a great football name. Elvis Gerbach, that's a great name
from
an athlete perspective. Mm-hmm. But then Gerbach went to the division rival and took him to a Super Bowl and won an MVP. So that one
it was the Super Bowl. They lost to that was the Super Bowl Dungy one with the Bucks.
Kurt Warner is another name, by the way.
Yeah, but Warner did not play in his 40s.
It's so funny.
We all think these guys were all 40.
He looked like Father Time. He looked like Father Christmas.
And so you thought Kurt Warner when
Warner
was like 37, 38?
The same as Gannon. It's just they're all in the same category. Kurt Warner's last game in the league was when he was 38.
And he was a shell.
He
last year. He wasn't a shell. His
37-year-old season, he was a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, he
had 4,500 yards, 30 touchdowns, 14 picks. This was back in
He was just stuck
08.
In the pocket the whole time.
Right.
He can move.
His final year was with Arizona. They were 10-5. He threw for 3,700, 26 touchdowns, and 14 interceptions. So, yeah. A lot of these guys, 38, 39, sure, but 40, 41, 42, it just doesn't really happen.
No, and then Tom Brady up to what? He was 45 years old or whatever the hell it is, or Aaron Rodgers is now.
TextLine is destroying you.
And TextLine is very mad.
It's not going
to
be.
They said
you
if
better,
something happens to Mahomes this week, you will never, ever, ever hear the end of it.
I'll make sure they never hear the end of it.
I didn't say anything. I just said that he's been healthy.
On Monday, we'll have a intervention, I think. And on Monday, Drew and I would call up Binkley and I would bring him in and I would say, I would let you start the show.
And then so I have to take the day off?
I would let you start the show and then we would kick you
out. I'm on suspension?
We would as a show suspend you. Drew and I would enact a suspension immediately.
Are you allowed to do that?
I don't know.
I feel like it's got to come from someone higher up.
We would try it though. And I would try to get Specs permission at that point in time.
If you caused
anything, I think we would have Bink fill in on Monday.
You're also saying this, Cody, on the cusp of him having like the 15th most rushing yards in the league and running people over and everything like that.
Too. I was just simply speaking a fact.
Yeah, by the way, sorry. Yeah, Dungy. It was Dungy's team, but Gruden won the Super Bowl. That's right. That's what nobody gave Gruden credit because it was Dungy's squad. Dungy left and then Gruden. You're correct. Thank you. Text line.
You're saying
it's such
a
weird.
Gruden won the Super Bowl. It was Dungy's roster, Dungy's scheme, all of it.
It's so weird because you could always, but then you could make the argument, be like, "What the hell? How the hell are you coming up short? All I had to do is walk in here in the building, and in 1 year I took this thing." Versus like at least the Switzer era, or like at least when like someone took over like a multi-time champion, slightly different.
Oh, text line.
Somebody says you better turn in your mic if he gets hurt. It's like turning in your badge and gun.
Yeah.
If you're an officer,
we will
I have to physically turn
your
in
headset.
My microphone.
You will hand us your headset.
Yeah, please hand in your headset and your microphone.
You think I'm joking. If he gets hurt Monday or Sunday, Monday morning, I'm calling in Bink. He's going to be sitting on standby right here. We're
going to
let you turn your microphone on and then we are kicking you off the show for the day.
I will turn off. I will, fine, I guess. I don't know. Although I still think it's going to have to come from somebody higher up than you. And
you don't think Speck will agree to this?
If he's out of town, you're going to go higher up.
I'll call him up. I'll call him up. I'll get Rob's permission. Whoever's in charge. I'll go even higher if I have
to. You're going up to Roxanne?
I'll do whatever I have to do. If you cause this injury mojo in the air.
We need to get as many people in here as possible just to witness.
All right.
To witness that.
All right, let's hope we don't have to do
in
that,
fairness,
Cody, for your sake.
You did mention a fact, but you know how these things go.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes.
Yes.
It would be unfortunate for me, admittedly.
And for Chiefs fans, I suppose, as well.
I want to be clear, though, that if not this week, I'm fine. I'm safe.
Yes. Yes, I think.
I only... 2 weeks?
Can we set a
timeline in which I'm free from this?
You better hope he doesn't get hurt this year.
This year?
People are yelling at their radios right now.
It's
just stop talking about it.
Yeah. I don't think you should mention this ever again.
The top text, really?
You will essentially end this show. You basically end this show. That's what'll happen.
It'll be tough.
Dang.
There's been people kicked off the radio in the last like 5 years in this city. I can't be getting that kind of
people kicked off a lot of shows recently.
I don't get any goodwill.
Yeah.
I'm getting goodwill. Built up goodwill.
Someone wants you to get tased on air, Cody.
I would enjoy seeing that.
Actually. Tased? That's my punishment for this?
So that's what somebody suggested.
We could get someone to come in and tase you.
I don't think they're allowed to just. Who?
Would you rather him get tased?
We'll
or
somebody.
Rather
I'll
him
tell you
just
right now. They're going to make me sign some sort of legally binding document. I don't know if that's going to happen on the show. I have to do that as a free citizen of free will.
Oh, we'll come to your backyard and do it. That's fine.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's going to have to be that.
Anyway.
The same as, remember, this is an above board show.
You're saying kick him off the air, and then someone says, go to his place.
Someone
and
said,
get
if this
taste.
Happens, Cody, you wouldn't even make it into work on Monday morning. Anyway, all right, let's move on.
Jeez.
Let's move on,
Sean. Okay. Yes, for now, let's move on. And let's talk instead what you mentioned at the beginning of the show that I'm still curious by. Because there's other names. At the beginning of the show, you'd said, hey, if you were going to make a personnel change and let somebody play more, somebody play less, how would you shift it? You mentioned you would like to see more Breshard Smith. I had mentioned more Jaden Hicks, which also meant a little bit less Shamari Connor in certain roles. Somebody had texted in, stunned, they said, that the two names we hadn't mentioned were Jared Wiley and Ashton Gelati playing more. The Jared Wiley one, why? Like, what is the argument for seeing him play more? I have seen him play all of a dozen snaps in his NFL career. Yeah. And Noah Gray, to his credit, has been bad this year.
Well, they haven't played this year.
But in previous years, has been a very effective NFL player. So, like, Jared Wiley, I don't need to see more or less or whatever. Whatever he plays is fine.
I wouldn't mind Gelati,
I could hear.
I wouldn't mind seeing more Noah Gray, like some more opportunity there. Heck, Robert Tonyan, there's a long list of tight ends before I would even get to Jared Wiley, with all due respect to him. So, yeah, I don't need to see more of him. Breshard Smith, some of it admittedly is the, hey, I haven't seen him fail yet. But I also think they need some more juice in the passing game from the backs. And Breshard Smith was a former wide receiver. So I like the potential there. If you got the ball to Breshard Smith in space, could he be somebody that could help out your offense moving forward? I don't know if I agree with the Gelati one. I know, Drew, you said he should play more than a minute.
Essentially would be starting level reps.
Yeah, and I don't think Gelati should be starting. But if you want to say he needs to start working in more, I'll listen to that. I just don't think he should be starting.
I think we give Charles Mennie a month, but like right now, he is not a successful pass rusher.
I think from the Eagles game, at least, I think Charles Mennie, who had 65% of the snaps, and I think Ashton Gelati had 41-ish.
That's a pretty typical split for starter to backup.
And then, of course, Karloff has had a ton.
I guess the question is, how in two games, like, again, no pressure, no sacks.
Mm-hmm.
The only guy getting pressure on the quarterbacks are Chris Jones or Karloftis. Nobody else on the defensive line. Or guys they blitz. So that's slightly.
Yeah, Drew Tranquil's got two sacks.
Guys,
he leads the team right
players,
now.
Players they physically blitz.
That's not good.
It's no turnovers, no sacks. A lot of the same stuff. And look, I don't know where that's coming from. Like, I saw Stephen Ruiz just put out an article that said the slow, boring end of the Chiefs dynasty, right? Like, the reason why you hadn't realized it's the end of the Chiefs dynasty, it's been this slow fade. And by slow fade is still insane to me. They were in the Super Bowl last year. What's slow about that? They won 15 games. Right. If the dynasty end, it will not be slow, in my opinion. It's been instant. Mm-hmm. They were in the Super Bowl.
Losing in the wild card round or something like that.
But it would still be instant, right? They were a 15-win team who was in the Super Bowl last year. If this year they go 10-7 and lose in the wild card game, then it wasn't a slow decline of their dynasty. It ended. It stopped, and they're going to have to start a new one. It didn't, like, slowly fade into obscurity because of two football games. They were a very viable team last year.
I would say regardless, but if they miss the playoffs, of course, I think it's definitely done. But let's say they lose in the wild card round. Is it jumping the gun to say that it's over because of how many times the Patriots lost in the wild card or the divisional round?
This current dynasty would be over.
But to say that they had no chance of winning the Super Bowl next year would be dumb.
Is the dynasty over then if they have one offseason?
If they were to lose in the wild card, I think you could say this dynasty, this one is over. Just like the Patriots had two, there doesn't mean that in 3 years another one could start. But this current era, this dynasty, yeah, if in fact they had an early exit, or as you said, of course, if they somehow missed the playoffs, that would also signify that, in my opinion.
It is kind of wild because still the problem, what Drew is probably pointing out here, is in a five-year run, let's say they lose in a wild card game this year, the five-year run would still be two Super Bowl wins, three Super Bowl appearances.
Depending on what...
Or 4 year run, it'd still be three Super Bowl appearances. And like, it doesn't still track as feeling like the end, but I'm with you.
But I think a dynasty ends if you're losing a wild card weekend, though. I understand.
Unless you win the Super Bowl the following year or whatever.
Sure.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is if they went 10-7 and they lost in the wild card round, but then they got right back again, I don't think it was ever over. Then I think it's the following year.
Two straight years.
Yeah, like okay. if they I went 10-7 and lost in the wild card, and then let's say they lost in the wild card again, then okay, it actually is done.
Two early exits in a row.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fair.
Even if it was like wild card divisional, it'd be like, okay, that dynasty's over. Now, how do you get back to the top?
If they don't make it to an AFC title game in back-to-back seasons, then for sure I would say that it's it's done. Because that's obviously all Patrick Mahomes knows.
Drew, someone on the video chat was asking the thing I mentioned before. I was going to ask him about, because we're just talking dynasty team. Is there any part of you that's worried that Joe Burrow will go the way of Andrew Luck and he'll just quit football?
So I've had multiple friends text me about this.
I'm asking because people put out the stats and the comparisons are apt.
I think the comparison is totally fair and I understand. I don't think it will happen, but I totally get why that comp is being discussed. I totally understand why that comparison is being made. I completely understand.
But Andrew Luck, unique individual, as we know.
He was running the ball a whole lot more.
Unique individual, but also, correct me if I'm wrong, he was dealing with a neck injury. Right?
I think neck was part of it.
And that's obviously far scarier. More serious and scarier about your long-term health. Joe Burrow has been hurt a lot. His toe, like, he's going to be fine. Like, the toe eventually, like, it's not like the toe is going to change, like, his entire quality of life by having turf toe is going to be changed forever. You know, so I think some of it is, fortunately for Joe Burrow, he's not dealing with, like, life-altering type injury stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't view it as the same. Now, if they continue to make the mistake of not protecting their franchise quarterback, then they're asking for it, you know? Yeah.
And part of that, I think, starts with the run game.
But this all goes back to the same thing. I wouldn't have paid T. Higgins and Jamar Chase. I would have done things to improve my defense to keep, or my offensive line. I would have just paid different people. I would have definitely paid Jamar Chase, but I wouldn't have paid both wide receivers. I would have, like, figured out a different way.
I guess the interesting thing to just put a bow on it is their problems were, he's always dealt with the offensive problems, and they've been okay, where his injuries haven't been, like, the wrist injury was not offensive line related. The toe injury, I think, is kind of offensive line related.
I think you take more hits, more chance.
Of course, which is part of the issue. Yeah. And in fairness, they haven't done a good job. I think part of it is also not just getting help, but it's the development of the offensive line has not been good.
By the way, just looked it up, more clarification. Andrew Luck, it was a shoulder injury that they said was going to continue to get worse. It kept popping up for him.
Same one that, like, Cam
because
Newton
in fairness to your point, Cody, he kept on getting hit. And Andrew Luck also had
He's just different.
Andrew Luck also never slid.
It's rare.
He ran guys over, and people were begging him to slide.
The Barry Sanders, Andrew Luck, it's rare, but, like, every 5 or 6 years, there's a stunning retirement that seems far too early for a player. That's all.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's common.
But I think we're getting ahead of ourselves thinking that that's anytime soon, but it's something to watch.
I think he's got a better mental makeup where he could push through it, but I can understand why people are bringing the comp up. Yeah, I get it.
Andrew Luck was very honest. Like, his mental health, he didn't like where it was trending by continuing to play. Andrew Luck, and this doesn't mean Joe Burrow's not, but Andrew Luck is also an extremely intelligent individual. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, just in terms of his whole mindset on stuff is a little bit different, I think, than the average athlete, I guess.
Last text we'll read today before I hand it over. 913, shut the hell up, Cody.
Well, there you go. There you go. You said it. Wow.
Good news for you.
We're back at it tomorrow. Full show, a Red Friday. We'll have some fun with a fan club. We'll talk to Josh Briscoe. We'll have Paul Charchian giving us some fantasy football advice as well. Up next, Josh Vernier, get you set for Royals and Mariners baseball.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.